Gaetano leaned forward slightly, eager to hear. Raising a trembling finger, Don Marcello said,
"You will withdraw from the election."
"I will what?" The old man coughed, then continued,
"You will withdraw and allow the Russian to be elected unanimously, in the name of peace and harmony. But you will tell the other members of the council that you agree with the Russian. In this time of extreme emergency, the council needs an experienced man at its head, not the youngest of their members."
"But Don Marcello..."
"Once you do that, they will all be indebted to you. They will be very grateful that you did not cause a rift in the council's ranks. They will respect your willingness to step aside in the name of harmony and efficiency."
The old man laughed wheezily.
"They might even become convinced that you are not a mafioso after all."
Reluctantly, feeling very downcast, Gaetano said, "I see. I understand." He knew that Don Marcello's suggestion was a command. Give up the chairmanship. It would be a humiliation, a personal affront. But perhaps giving it up voluntarily would be better than being beaten in a vote. Still, Gaetano glowered in the shadows of the dusty old room. "I am a member of the Global Economic Council," he told himself. "I represent all of United Europe, nearly 750 million people, and I must accept this humiliation? I must grovel in the dust? Why? Why must I allow them to show such disrespect for me?" He knew why. Don Marcello had raised him to his present height, and Don Marcello could push him down into oblivion, quite literally, whenever he chose to. He looked down at the old man, sunken into his wheelchair, his face half hidden in shadows, his mind spinning intricate webs of power. How much longer can this ancient wreck of a man keep on living? Why don't I just reach over and turn off his batteries for a couple of minutes? No one would know. Then I could step into his place. "Another thing," Don Marcello murmured, totally unaware of the younger man's murderous thoughts. "There will be a meeting soon, perhaps as early as next week, in the Cayman Islands. Top people from Japan, Latin America, the States, everywhere. You will represent me at this meeting." Gaetano blanched. "I shouldn't be seen with such people." "You won't be seen. The meeting will be totally private. Not even the news satellites will notice it. We have taken steps to see to that. But still, I want you to give them the complete layout of the GEC's program on the greenhouse. And I want them to vote for you to coordinate all our actions in this regard. That is an election I want you to win." Gaetano felt as if he were soaring among the clouds. "Me? You want me to be the head?"
"Capo di tutti capi," Don Marcello said.
Then he made that wheezing laugh again.
"Except for me, of course. You can be boss of all the other bosses, but I am still your boss, understand?"
"Yes, of course. Thank you, Don Marcello."
And he thought, "You will be my boss for as long as you live." For such a powerful office, the room looked small and indecently shabby. It was high in a skyscraper in midtown Manhattan, and if the windows had been clean, they would have offered a fine view of the old Rockefeller Center and even a glimpse of Central Park's threadbare greenery. But the four people in the office were focused entirely on their own problems. Two of them were reporters, a man and a woman, both in their early 30s, both aggressive, ambitious, and angry. Josh Pollitt was the wiry, high-strung type. He had wadded his suit jacket into a ball and flung it across the room an hour ago. Harriet McIntyre had shouted so much that her throat was sore and rasping. The third person was the News Network's president and CEO, sleek-looking, with a beautifully groomed silver-gray toupee and a hand-tailored silk suit that cost a month of the two reporters' pay combined. Although the argument had been raging for more than an hour, neither of the reporters had said aloud what was commonly gossiped in the office hallways. that Wayne Manley had risen to his present post on the strength of his skin color rather than his abilities. Sitting at the head of the wobbly steel table was the owner of the network and chairman of the corporation's board of directors. To her back, she was called the Empress Theodora.
"But I've got corroboration," Pollitt was yelling. "I've got 10 different sources, all telling me the same story."
"Leaks," muttered Manley, his eye on Theodora rather than his reporters. "Try to put them on the air and they'll clam up. Then they'll sue." McIntyre, coolly blonde on camera, tried to cool things off here.
"Let's all calm down a little and see where we stand."
"Fine idea," said Theodora. Even seated at the rickety table, she looked tall, austere, regal.
"Okay," said Pollitt.
He sucked in a deep breath, then, glaring across the table at Manley, said,
"There's a global catastrophe coming down. The greenhouse effect is going to hit with a vengeance. Sea levels up 30 feet, killer storms all the time, half the world flooded out."
Manley muttered, "Nonsense."
"I've got Zachary Freiberg's word for it," Pollitt insisted. "He's a distinguished scientist from Caltech."
"He's not with Caltech," said Manley. "Hasn't been for 10 years.
"He's a visiting professor there," countered Pollitt. "He's also lectured at MIT, University of Texas, and half a dozen countries overseas."
"But he works for Dan Randolph, doesn't he?"
"Dan Randolph?"
Theodora's eyes snapped.
"I met him once. I wouldn't trust him as far as I could throw this building."
Harriet McIntyre wondered if Randolph had made a pass at her, or failed to make a pass at her.
"Freiberg's top talent," Pollitt was saying. "He says that this greenhouse will hit in 10 years, maybe less."
"Absolute nonsense," Manley said.
"There's more,"
McIntyre interjected, throat rasping.
"3 months ago, the GEC confiscated Astro Manufacturing. Just took it entirely away from Dan Randolph for some little infraction of the rules."
"It must have been more than a little infraction," said Theodora.
"And the GEC has been quietly muscling every major corporation on Earth," McIntyre went on, "especially the big 7 space companies."
"Over this make-believe greenhouse cliff," Manley sniffed.
"Right," she croaked. "The GEC is trying to line up all the major corporations, especially those in energy and manufacturing, to follow some master plan that they're drawing up."
They went into another hour of fevered discussion, slightly calmer this time. At least there was no screaming. But when all the arguments were laid out on the table and the two reporters sat back exhausted, Manley still said,
"You don't have anyone who will admit to this greenhouse thing on camera. Not even Freiberg."
"He's being muzzled," said Pollitt wearily.
"They're all being muzzled,"
McIntyre added. Shaking his head again, Manley said, "We can't go on the air with rumor and innuendo. We'd get sued." Turning to the Empress, "And our FCC license renewal comes up in 8 months."
"But this is an important story," Pollitt pleaded. "It's vital. Millions of lives are at stake, and the goddamned government's suppressing the story."
"The GEC," McIntyre corrected gently.
"But Washington's going along with them,"
Pollitt's voice sounded agonized.
"We've got to do something," McIntyre said.
All three of them turned to Theodora. She sat there for a long moment like a true empress, calm, aloof, all-powerful. Then,
"What I am about to tell you is in strictest confidence. If you repeat it anywhere, to anyone, I will deny it totally, and you will not only be fired, but blackballed throughout the industry. Do you understand?"
They nodded dumbly.
"The greenhouse threat is real. The GEC is putting together a monumental effort to stop it from happening. I have been asked by the president himself to keep the lid on this story until the GEC is prepared to make it public. This network will cooperate with the GEC and the United States government in every way possible. Is that understood?"
More nods.
"Good. Then this is the last word any of us will utter on this subject until the GEC is ready to make its announcement."
"When will that be?" Pollitt found the strength to ask.
"When they're ready."
With that, the Empress got to her feet and headed regally for the door. Manley scrambled to catch up with her.
McIntyre stated.